All right. I'm going to paint the picture for you here. We have Todd Lebo in studio. He and I are sitting apart from one another with the plexiglass barrier that you built. Did you build this or did Drake
built
the partition?
The partition.
Saying that. I keep telling you Drake built that damn thing.
I could have swore you sent an email out saying you built
it. You've gotten a lot of credit. You've gotten a lot of credit for this, by the way.
Wasn't me.
I mean, let's be honest. The Drake does everything around here. Wow. Couldn't keep that microphone to stay up, right? Is that what you're talking about?
Yeah, need a little Viagra.
Blue Chew.
Some Blue Chew for that that microphone stand there.
I'm a free agent.
And then on the other side is Jamie Bluma, 6 feet apart from Todd Lebo and myself. And COVID-free, you've taken a couple tests, huh?
I have, yeah.
So let's talk about that real quick, just because I do think that people actually, it's interesting to hear the experience that everybody has. Why did you get tested a couple times?
So Emily, as you guys well know, has been on a project down in Natchez, Mississippi, helping get a restaurant, hotel/bar open down there. She's still
which
working.
Is probably a challenge during a pandemic.
It is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, good timing on opening a restaurant March 6th, but it is what it is, so battling through it. But they had opened their rooftop bar, you know, social distancing and the same thing. Got to wear your mask when you get in there, but kind of all systems go. And I think with as busy as they were, I think they're at 50% capacity or whatever, but a couple of their staff, she had some symptoms 2 weeks ago, so the 8th of July. What is today? 21. So she went and got tested that morning and tested positive, and I said, well, you know, I think you should come home to quarantine, not down there, just because she doesn't know that many people and people take care of her. So she came home in the first couple days, had some symptoms, was achy and had a headache, bit of a fever, never a crazy high fever, you know, 99, never 100. Mm-hmm. And then after that, lost the sense of taste and smell, which was bizarre.
Still gone or is it back?
It's back. Yeah. It's back. So a week into it.
Could have been your poor cooking.
My cooking is wonderful.
Yeah, I actually believe that. I would
never
guess
trust
that you're
a skinny cook.
You're half the man you used to be.
I'm skinnier.
Yeah.
But yeah, so she lost her taste and smell and was a little bit tired. So that went for a couple days, and then the last 6-7 days, asymptomatic at all. You know, none of that anymore. Mm-hmm. Got her sense of taste and smell back. I had gone once. I got a test. I went back, and got negative twice. Went and took another one yesterday just in case. I'm still doing a good job of social distancing and wearing your mask and doing all that so ever. But she ended up going back to Mississippi yesterday. They want to get the restaurant back open and all that. So we're super lucky that the symptoms weren't bad. But just like you hear about, you know, headache, a little bit of a fever. The taste and smell thing was totally bizarre for her. But then, you know, everything back to normal. Not normal, whatever normal means anymore.
Everything right. Back to how it is today on July 21st.
So that was it. So lucky compared to what you've heard with, you know, many other people and what everybody's
did
going through.
Did you hear Freddie Freeman yesterday?
A little bit. I did. That was
that's
crazy.
Eye-opening, right?
Yeah, 104.5 and was praying that he was going to make it through it.
You get 104 fever, that's when your mind starts going crazy. You start seeing things. I remember having a bad fever like that when I was a kid. People were in my room and they weren't there.
Right, yeah. Right.
Know, stuff crawling on the walls.
Yeah. Young, healthy, athletic guy praying at night to make it through the night. I mean, that is that. And so it's great that she didn't have it. She didn't have that kind of.
Well, yeah, that's great.
It.
And you just don't know. I mean, you can do all the contact tracing you want. But if a person that hasn't and didn't know it went and infected.
Yeah, that's what these
hard thing
to figure out. Athletes are doing now. And they've been doing it. Sporting has been doing it for months or a couple months now. And the Royals. The first thing they do when they get up in the morning is answer these questions, this little questionnaire. Where did you go when you came home last night?
Right.
Who did you see? Were you at the store? Did you go to someone else's house and all that? And then they, every other day in Major League Baseball, they're taking the test. They're doing different kind of tests. They're doing the saliva test, not the swab test. But they, you know, taking those tests every other day. And, you know, that way they try to find out if you come up positive after you've been in their work bubble. It's not a bubble because they're in a work bubble. When they get to the K, it's a bubble. But when they go home, they're supposed to do right and not get themselves somewhere where they're exposed to a lot of different people. But, you know, you live through life. Can you just drive home and go to your house and only see your family? Probably. Do you? Maybe not. I mean, that's probably okay for Alex Gordon. you know, he's got a wife and kids at home. You know, it, for some of these younger guys, maybe they got a roommate. You know, maybe they got to stop somewhere and get some food or whatever. It, it's,
well, when
it's
you
just
live on your own, too, like, I, you know, we in my family, I got five people at home that, and I do most of the cooking nowadays because of my wife's work schedule.
And you're a wonderful cook.
I'm a wonderful cook. I'm getting fatter, you know. but it's it is easier to cook for five than it is for one, to be honest.
Yeah, so you know, just got to get some food.
I mean, I remember when I was single, it's like, am I really going to buy all the ingredients to cook something and then eat a fourth of what I cooked?
I don't want to eat this 4 days in a row.
It didn't save
me. Right, I don't need these leftovers.
It didn't save me any money, and it took me more time. And so for a lot of guys, it's probably I'm going to get carry out on a consistent basis. Every time you get carry out, that's a possible exposure. You know, when you go to the grocery store, it's a possible exposure. Nothing's zero risk, so anybody can get it. It's just trying to reduce that risk as much as possible through the day. So when you did your test, did they jam that thing way up in your nose?
So
or?
the first one that I did was a drive-through one, and you do it yourself. So you're actually talking to the nurse outside of
did
your
car. Did you give her hell? Did you put it all the way in there?
And so you had to get lean your head back, stick it in there, and then
scrub the old brain,
twizzle it around for. And she did the countdown for you. She wanted you.
But
to
did
do
you
it
have
for,
to get it all the way up
yeah.
there?
So the
they got a little line on it or something.
Absolutely. The swab had a notch in it, so you she could tell. Well, that's also where you break it off when you put it in the test tube or whatever when you're done. But I think that's also a gauge of you're almost
how
touching
deep.
The back of your brain.
Yeah.
And then you kind of twizzle it around, and so you get a good sample. And then you do it on the other side, too. So on that
did
one,
the double guy.
That was the double nose swab. Yeah. So that was the most, you know, I wouldn't say it was terrible. It's an interesting
great,
experience.
Yeah.
I mean, I never shoved a Q-tip
wouldn't walk around
in there that
doing
far.
That every day for the fun of it.
No, not really. But it makes you cough or sneeze or fart or whatever.
Yeah, makes your eyes water like crazy.
A little bit. Not a little bit, a lot of bit.
Yeah.
So that was the most thorough one, I think, of all the ones that I've done. Now, I've done another one that you sit out in your car. It's not you pull up in the parking lot. They come out urgent care somewhere, and they come out and they have a one nurse ask you questions while the other one takes your temperature on the thing, and then she's got the swab out and she or he and gets in there pretty good.
Yep.
And then you know we'll call you in 3 days.
Yeah.
So
I saw an interesting story yesterday on the news. Stowers Institute has been working big on this, right? Obviously, great Kansas City institution there, and they've got a one that they believe is going to be very accurate. That's like the saliva one, which is the ones that what the baseball players are doing.
Yeah.
It's less invasive. You don't need to have because I guess there's turning out to be
the saliva. How's the turnaround on that as far as time?
They're doing it pretty quickly down there. Now this is they don't have this mass produced for everyone, but they're able to do it down there. The swabs are becoming a shortage.
Oh, yeah.
It's a physical thing.
Oh, for sure.
So that's part of the reason you don't need that if you're doing the saliva test. So that's great. The thing I like about this entire situation, this isn't about sports. The thing I like about this situation is we are more equipped now with the medical people and the smart people working on it and the number of people working on it to find some sort of a solution for testing and for vaccines than we've ever been before. Because there are all these great places, like the Stowers Institute, that has been working so long on cancer research. But now, they're brilliant people down there, all right? There's something else happening. Let's shift. They weren't working 10 months ago on, hey, let's work on a test for the coronavirus with saliva.
No
reason but then it
to.
Became, the, now they've got these people and they've shifted some of their resources and they're working on that. That's happening all over the world,
well,
not just the country.
Yeah.
It's great.
It's big business right now, the testing thing.
For sure.
It's big business because there's a lot of companies that are now needing to test their employees on a consistent basis and all that. And so there's a lot of companies that are shifting.
There's some greater good and some money to be made.
Hey, and if and you
well,
know
there's
what?
There's a ton of companies that have shifted gears a little bit. Obviously, Ford with making masks and ventilators, not masks, but ventilators and doing stuff like that. And people that were making liquor are now making
hand sanitizer.
I mean, across the board, there's been a paradigm shift with some companies to do some stuff.
So my experience with I got tested last week and haven't got my results back. I did it partially, well, the gal that's taking care of our kids had a possible indirect exposure. And so she was good about telling us ahead of time, and so we quarantined her from our kids for 14 days and just said, hey, let's just be careful until you get... And she got two tests back negative before we you know allowed her to come back around the kids. And but I thought, well, shoot, maybe we should get tested too just in case because she's been around the kids for a few days. And so called our doctor. They're like, yeah, you don't qualify for a test. You don't have any symptoms, and you haven't had a direct exposure.
Yeah, you're too far away.
And so they said, you could try CVS or you could try the Johnson County Health Department. So I tried CVS, and CVS said, you don't qualify for a test. And then I went to the Johnson, and this is good for people to know because I didn't know any of this stuff. I went to the Johnson County Health Department website, and you can just sign up for a free drive-up test. Now, it's going to be a week, and it's going to be a week out. It was for me, like, it was a Wednesday. I had to sign up. The earliest I could get in was the next Wednesday. And I thought, well, I might as well go ahead and do it, sign up. And it's drive-through.
And that's how I was on the first one, because I had signed up to do this test before Emily had come, you know, had tested positive. I just wanted to check. Just to make sure.
You just wanted to get something stuck up your nose.
I'm asymptomatic, and I like having things shoved up my face.
Of course. Let's make sure we clip that.
I'm glad she's doing well.
The one that they did out there was the kind where you pull up, and the nurse jams the thing way up into your brain, and she went up my left nostril, and she was rooting around in there, and I thought, well, there's no way she can get that thing any further. And she said, do you have a deviated septum? And I said, well, I've had one, but I had surgery on it a long time ago. She goes, well, I can't, I'm going to have to do the other nostril. And I was already like, you're going to do that again? Because the water was just, I don't know where, if it just plugs right into your tear ducts or what it does, I did not think it was a very comfortable process. Well, I mean, it's 10 seconds. You can get through it. I mean, it's 10 seconds. Right. You know, it's not that big of a deal. But I will say that it was unlike anything I'd ever experienced before.
Did she undeviate your septum with the swab?
I said, well, yeah, you're kind of knock it back over there.
Fix this thing for me, would you?
Through there. But, well, I'm glad that you tested negative twice and that you're being responsible. And we're glad that Emily's feeling better, too. Yep. So that's good. That's good. And now we get a chance to talk baseball. There was actually a game last night that we could watch. Did you?
It was great.
What did you think? What was it like for you watching a game?
It was good.
It
was
Royals game.
The first part of it was funny because you see players sitting in the crown seats.
Yeah.
So that was the first thing. Like, hey, I know that guy.
Yeah.
You know, it was funny. I mean, when I was doing lessons yesterday, I was asking all the kids, like, hey, you gonna go home and watch the game? And the majority of the kids were. They're excited to go home, even though it's a preseason game and it doesn't count or whatever exhibition. But you know, to go get a chance to see it on TV and maybe see some of the new guys a little bit. Got to see, you know, Bobby Witt Jr. play a little shortstop, get that bat. It was great. It was just great to see baseball on TV. I was texting Ryan and Rex, you know, just about stories they were telling, and I was listening about the guy living in Alaska and all that. I mean, I coached in Alaska, so I was laughing about, you know, having been up there, and I kind of looked up to see where he had played. Just why, you know, why Alaska?
Right.
And if he had played up, maybe he played up there at
one point
in college.
Didn't Ryan say he had like a buddy that lived up there and he just went up and stayed with him basically?
So that's what it sounded like. And then the whole drive into spring training from Alaska and where he stayed along the way and all that. So it was great just to have baseball back on TV, to hear Rex, to hear Ryan, to have a sense of normalcy
a
little bit. Absolutely.
Know? We've
absolutely
missed it for a while. And, you know, the Royals haven't been very good the last couple of years, but you've missed having that on, you know, it's kind of like our summer. You just turn it on, and maybe you're not sitting there staring at every pitch because it's not the most important thing if you're not in the mix, but it's what we do, and we watch it. So it's different because obviously there's no fans there. And I think there's a bit of irony somewhere that they finally have put the nets all the way down the line, protecting nobody now.
Right.
It's a weird thing. They should have done that a long time ago. But now these, you know, baseballs are just flying in the stands. And they don't really even – someone, I guess, goes and picks those things up at some point. They're just laying around there.
So I've heard, you know, you can do the cutout thing, mm-hmm. and those are going to be in X amount of seats at some point. And I heard – I don't know where it is and what team. If the ball hits you say it's your – they'll
you win
get
a prize,
it, and they will send it to you.
Mail you the ball. That's pretty good.
Yeah. If they can, I heard
I
them,
like that.
That's actually awesome.
That's
like
great.
That, if they can actually figure out how to make that work.
Well, it's going to feel different and weird for us to watch these on TV. Because there's no real crowd there. But the Royals are trying to do some crowd noise and the organ and do those things. So last night on the Zoom after the game, Mike Matheny talked about this a little bit. And he was one of the guys behind this. He's been talking about this for about a week. When they were having their inter-squad games, they brought an umpire in last week. And they were like, man, this is too quiet in here.
Right.
They're starting to think ahead. What if we have an argument here in a game at some point? It's going to be too loud for everyone to hear.
Word.
You're hearing all of it on TV, and they were like, we got to have something that's get a little ambience in here. So they've been working on that. Mike Matheny said it was okay last night.
You know, I had a number of players that mentioned, you know, this is way better than I thought it was going to be. And I think it's in part to some of the crowd noise, to how they were working, some of the sounds of the game. There was a time, even during BP, you know, BP, we don't have normally a whole lot of fans in the stand. It felt like normal season, seeing another team across there with the music, and it just had that vibe. But I want to tell you, nothing replaces having our fans in the stands, but it was better than what I thought it was going to be also. They're still going to keep working, I'm sure, to make it a better experience for the broadcast. But overall, it was just two teams competing against each other. And, you know, unfortunately, we were fighting from behind for most of it.
I think they're going to have a little bit of time to kind of work out what it sounds like on TV. Because I watched three or four different games yesterday in different parts. And I thought some were too quiet. I thought the Rose were a little bit too quiet last night with the crowd. And I thought it was a little bit better some places. And I don't think it's what it feels like there, because you heard Mike talk about, I think the players heard it better than we heard it on TV.
I would like to be out there at one point just to see how it feels sitting in the dugout or sitting in the stands versus watching it
on
from
TV.
Home. I think it feels less weird watching it at home. Because you're sitting in your living room and you're listening to Rex and Ryan and you're watching the game going on and it seems okay.
Yeah, when you're out there, I think that little rumble of the crowd's probably a little bit better, but you get there's no
just no ambient sound going on.
Hey, beer man. There's no, you know, lemonade. There's no peanut. You know, you hear all those little things that happen, and you don't have that going. I like the fact they're announcing the batters and the organist. Is the sounds? I don't know if there's actually an organist there, or they're just playing it. I don't know how they're doing that, but that feels right. And a lot of times when you're at the game and you're watching, you know, during the game, there's nothing happening because they don't want to play noises during a pitch, right? But the other ambience is not just a rumble of crowd. You hear more stuff when you're out there at the game. But listen, I ain't complaining, man.
So
it's out there and it's happening.
So I have a lot of thoughts on this audio stuff. So they're piping it in through the actual speakers at the stadium.
Yeah.
In baseball. In soccer, they are just putting it over the TV.
Like on the MLS stuff, right?
Well, in Germany and in England, too.
I thought some of the stuff over there, they were actually playing the chants and cheers so players felt it too.
Okay, now maybe they are starting to do that, because that's what I was saying back when I started first watching the games over there. Was like, they should be playing this in the stadium, not just over the TV.
It's because for the players as much as anything.
Yeah, because if you're a player and you hear that crowd, but here's the thing, and we're talking about people without jobs right now and all that stuff, job creation, the sound guy has an important job. Like, I actually find myself listening now when I watch games to hear, like, oh, he just, like, because he has to push a button.
Got a hot key for a double play?
A shot sails, you know, past the post. Ooh, you want to hear that one. Or the ref, you know, gives a call against your team. Boo! Yeah. I mean, and for baseball, you know, if what happens every time a fly ball gets anywhere toward medium to deep center field? The crowd all thinks it's gone for the first 2 seconds, right?
Every 12-year-old in the upper deck thinks it's a home run, any ball in the air.
And then, you know, so, like, I think, like, let's have somebody have that be their job.
Or multiple people. Yeah, I mean, not just one. I mean,
let's get some people working.
It'll
get
more sophisticated as they go, I think.
Yeah.
Why not? Make it sound. You want it to feel right for the players, and you want it to feel right for the people watching on TV.
Yeah.
Because nothing's normal in your life right now. Let's try to make this as normal as we can.
And I heard one of the announcers say that we know it's not real, but it allows you to kind of feel like it is for a little bit. And that's what kind of sports is all about right now. Like, we know the world isn't normal around us. We know that things are going wrong and that, you know, we're going to be dealing with something for a while. But for that 2 hours that you get to watch your team, you get to kind of feel like things are normal. You get to watch your team. And everything that people can do, that the teams can do to connect with their fans a little bit, sending them the foul ball that sent to their seats. The sporting players after their game the other day, you know, when they play, they go and they put their arms and they sing to the cauldron, and the cauldron sings back to them. They went to that end of the soccer field and they put their arms around each other and they sang and they filmed it. You know, the Sporting KC guys filmed it, and the fans could feel like they were doing it. It's just a little thing.
Yeah.
And those things will actually mean a lot, I think, to the fans, to feel like, hey, we're actually getting together for something.
Well, I mean, that goes along the whole lines of this COVID thing, is it causes you to get creative. in a whole lot of different ways, in a whole lot of different venues, and just to do things different than we've ever done it before, to help, you know, as much normalcy as you can. I mean, when you're out there going to field a fly ball, if you hear the crowd, you're not going to see the crowd when you're out there running a fly ball down anyway, because you're locked in.
Yeah,
you know, but if you're not a very good outfielder if you're seeing the crowd and not the ball.
Yeah.
But that
you know, I guess it probably will be a little bit different. You know, that's one of the things about the triple-decker stadium. When you come from the minor leagues, those fly balls look a little different. And I guess it'll probably be easier to see fly balls than, you know, if there's a bunch of white shirts in the upper deck.
Depending on what color the seats are.
Yeah. And to Canada,
it's
dark blue,
it's going to be completely different. Maybe it's easier, maybe it's harder, depending on where you're at, but it's something else that guys are going to have to get used to compared to what they're used to seeing. Yeah, especially at a stadium that maybe used to sell out and now doesn't sell out.
Yeah,
what color the seats are.
For the players, it'd have to be easier to focus on the ball, like, you know, third baseman throwing the ball over to first. There's no one behind the third baseman wearing a shirt that looks like a ball. You know, I mean, you know, it'll be, I'm not saying there'll be less errors or anything, but it's going to be different for them.
Completely different.
Completely different. It'll be, you know, it's like a workout. But they have to find a way to have the intensity, because you need that. And this was different last night, because it was, you know, listen, it was just, and there's some weird things, because there, you know, there was a tie in New York last night. They're not, you know, these exhibition games are going to be different than the others. And the regular season games will be different, because they're going to do, you know, extra innings a little bit differently. But they'll find, the players will need to find a way to have the intensity. And that's going to be on them individually. Because sometimes you can get that from the crowd, you can get that from, it's going to be up to them now to figure out, how do I get myself up to play
a
game? Because you've done this. Hey, listen, the Royals went through this in 13 and 14. How do you get yourself up for a game when there's 12,000 people there as opposed to 39,000 people there? It's a different feel. You have to manufacture it.
Not just 13 and 14. I mean, a lot of the years that we weren't very good, when you got guys coming up, I mean, a lot of the things that was good about it is you got a lot of young guys coming up trying to get to the big league. So there, in that regard, there's that intensity, because you as a player, you want to break into the major leagues and you want to stay in the major leagues. It's going to be, maybe it's harder, just thinking out loud, that guys that have been in the big leagues and know they're going to be in the big leagues, you're a little bit complacent because you have been here and you're locked in. Maybe it's a little bit tougher for those guys to, you know, to get the intensity level up in a 60-game season. I wouldn't think it would be that tough, because you know this is a sprint. As soon as we get going, and we've got an everybody's got an opportunity on paper to get to the postseason. So we got 60 games. Let's go. Bust it.
I think watching the games in Korea, watching these other sports that have taken place without people in the crowd, I think what we've seen is competition is competition. You know, and I know that, if you're playing in front of a whole bunch of people, there's that an immediate adrenaline rush that you don't even have to force out of yourself or anything. But I think what I've seen from guys, for the most part, is you get on the field of competition against somebody else that's really, really good and trying to beat you, that raises your level right there. I do think there's a bigger challenge for baseball, maybe because of the nature of the sport calls for so much standing around. You know, it calls for, you have to have a concentration level of nothing's happening for a long period of time, but something could happen that involves me any minute, so I have to be ready for it. Whereas, like, if you're playing basketball or football, you don't have to be reminded that a guy's about to smash your face in. You know, right. you're ready for that. But I do think that what you said about the 60-game schedule helps a lot. Because I think the biggest challenge for guys a lot of times with baseball is, I'm in game 100 of 162. I'm exhausted. It's the middle of the day in Baltimore, and right. I don't know what hotel I've been staying in, and that stuff. But when it's 60 games, it's a lot. I think that's going to make it so much more brief and easier for the guys to focus. And when you're in the batter's box and a guy's throwing 95 miles per
hour,
that's
what I was just going
to
say.
You don't have to have a crowd to remind you that you got to be on your toes.
I was just going to say that. You got to be locked in. I mean, these dudes are throwing 95 to 100 miles an hour, and it's you versus him, and that's the inherent competition of batter versus hitter and hitter versus batter every single time there's an at-bat that we've been working at since we were children. So that won't change. I don't think there's any problem with intensity at-bat to at-bat, because you're out there to get it done and you're out there to beat that guy. And still, the more that you beat that guy, the bigger your wallet gets,
Yeah.
At the end of the day.
Yeah.
So that's what it's all about, you know, and you won that competition's competition.
Yeah, and when you and the better the competition, the more your intensity goes up. I'll never forget, and real quick story and then we'll break. When I was traveling with the Royals back in those 100 lost days, who was the long, lanky guy? Bautista was his last name. I can't remember. It was
Miguel Bautista.
Guy threw 98 miles an hour. He had like an...
He wrote poetry in the dugout as well, just so you know.
Is that right? Boy,
strange cat.
He had an 89-mile-per-hour slider. And he was coming back from an injury, and I think we were in Tampa. We were somewhere. And the guys let me hold the radar gun behind the catcher while he was throwing, like, he was trying to work his way back from injury, and they were trying to see where he was on the gun. And so they, I don't know why, but they let me hold the radar gun. And Justin Huber was on the team, and they had him get in the batter's box to just give him the look of a hitter while he was pitching. And one of the first pitches came right up under his chin at 98 miles per hour, and I was standing 5 feet from it. And I remember thinking, he almost killed that guy. And Huber just kind of leaned back, and he kind of did one of those pat his chest like, whew, you know, that was a little something. And I thought to myself, these guys stand in here facing this every day.
You better be on your toes.
I mean, better be ready to go.
I mean, you better be at a heightened sense of awareness because you can't, like, you watch the little kids play, and most of them are taking two steps out of the batter's box before the pitch even comes in because they're worried about getting hit. And it takes them a while to kind of override that and realize, I've got to be thinking I'm going to hit this ball even though knowing it might hit me. And these guys got to do it facing 98 miles an hour. I don't think they need a crowd to have them locked in. So it's going to be interesting. We'll take a break. We'll talk more about the actual Royals themselves and what we're looking forward to after this. I downloaded this song onto my iTunes.
This is Meek Mill?
And I was listening to it. This is not Meek Mill.
This is Morgan Wallen.
And
come on.
MW.
You can probably count the number
Florida,
of country
Georgia
music
line.
Songs on my iPod by like on one hand or two. My wife loves country music, and she heard me like singing along to this song and playing it. And she's like, what has the pandemic done to you?
What is happening?
I said, you know what? I'm all for positive energy, guys. And when this song came on, and every time the way Bloomer reacts when this song comes on, it puts a happy thought in my head.
What's it called?
Up Down.
I assume it's Up Down.
Morgan Wallen.
I'm going to put it on one of my playlists right now.
He's featuring Florida Georgia Line.
Yeah.
So
I don't
tell. Hardy,
what you know about TL?
Hardy, who's a country artist now, he's written a bunch of these songs. I think he wrote this one for Morgan. He's written a bunch of stuff, Florida Georgia Line. All those guys are good.
Dude, I love Morgan Wallen. Yeah. He's the man.
I'm just putting it on a playlist
show you the
right
one
now.
Last week,
we
the
go.
Struggle Bus.
Yeah, I played it for you.
That was great.
You were on the phone. But
oh, that's right.
I had it playing.
It's that positive connotation, though, and that's a compliment to you, Jamie. I think of this song, and I'm like, you know what? This makes Bluma happy, and Bluma's like one of the nicest guys I know, and it makes me happy.
There you go.
So now I listen to this song, and I like it.
I don't know what's going to make Royals fans happy. I guess probably finding out if they have some starting pitching. I don't know where we're going to be right now.
See that transition Lebo did?
Mike Montgomery last night. Now, listen, he was throwing some pitches that he wouldn't have thrown. He admitted this after the game. He shook Salvi off a couple of times, and I think both of them ended up over the wall. So, you know, you're learning these things a little bit. But he's not a power arm, okay? It's a little different look. But now they're thin right now. Jacob Junis is not with them. Brad Keller's back, but he, you know, it's going to take him a little bit of
not completely
a little bit
back.
Of time.
Junis is still working his way back from the COVID thing. He needs to build his arm up, and
right.
Keller has actually been out recently because of the COVID thing. So
but he is back with the team now.
Yeah, but so, he's going to have to work his way back now.
So you know, they had some issues at starting pitching to begin with. Okay, you don't lose 100 games twice in a row without having some issues at starting pitching. Although they did lose a lot of leads last year, but. They
did you hear
dominant.
That stat last
53
night?
53 games or
53
whatever?
53 or 56
Led
leads lost.
Now, I don't know what that means. Were you leading in the first inning or
doesn't
the seventh
matter.
Inning? Yeah.
You were leading
you were
at
leading
some point.
At some point, and you couldn't get it done. Some of those leads were lost by the starting pitching as well. But Mike Montgomery after the game, I mean, he knows. Listen, you sit there and watch this stuff. You're healthy. You're going to be depended on.
Me and Danny, we talked about it. We definitely want to do our part. You know, we know we got to eat some innings. You know, I know we have an expanded roster for the first couple weeks, but, you know, losing those two guys is big because they're, you know, big contributors. And I think it just means
everyone else, you know, including myself and Dan, we're just going to have to step it up and pick up the slack until they can get back. And, you know, I really have been impressed with a lot of these guys in this camp, especially the younger guys. So, but yeah, I think, you know, our job is to go out there and really compete and give us a chance to win. And, you know, I think me and Danny know that. So, you know, we got a lot of confidence in what we do, and we just, you know, go toe to toe and see what we can accomplish this year.
I feel like I was looking at the lineup last night, and if you look at the Royals lineup, and I guess it's like spring training for us right now, like in the spring, you can, to me, look at that lineup and say, it's got the chance to be a decent lineup. You know what, Merrifield's a good hitter. Mondesi's got potential to be a big-time hitter. Dozier has produced.
Needs to follow up on last year.
He needs to follow up. We'll see if he can do that. But you can, you know, Salvi is back in the lineup. But
having Salvi in the lineup helps a lot. Remember the beginning last year, it was just like six outs in a row.
Yeah.
After the first three.
Just
having a guy who's a pro in there. So the lineup does look better.
Soler, all that. So I feel like you can look at the lineup and talk yourself into thinking this is a lineup that can compete. But then I look at the pitching, and that's where I just go, I think this is going to be what makes it really. They're going to have to catch lightning in a bottle with some guys in order to compete in this shortened season. I mean, it's and then having two of your workhorses in the rotation not being ready to start the season is not ideal.
Not good at all. And you just hope that maybe pitching's a little bit ahead of hitting to start the year, because if it's not, we're really in trouble.
Hey, let me ask you a question then on that. Usually, I feel like at the beginning of the year, pitching is way ahead, but part of that is also that it's April and it's freezing cold in half the markets, and guys aren't warmed up as hitters. It's July. Is that gonna? What do you think? Do you think that'll still be pitching ahead of hitting, or will the weather be more on the side of the hitters since they're playing when it's going to be hot outside?
Oh, I think there's no doubt the weather's going to be on the side of the hitters, because when it's cold at the beginning of the season, once you get warm and you're ready to pitch, you have the advantage for sure.
Mm-hmm.
Once the game gets going and guys get moving around and doing all that stuff, which is what it's going to be like now. So I don't think it's going to be as big a factor as it is early in a regular season because of the weather being cold. I mean, I watch games right now. Some guys are locked in, and you just wonder who got to do what, where, during the break. You know, where were guys working out? What were they doing? What did they have the ability to do? Where did they go to do some stuff? I mean, you heard Keller talking about throwing with his arm in his sock and doing all that kind of stuff, and guys are creating ways to stay ready to go and knowing that at any point, we're going to start the season, and here we go. We're going to have 3 weeks, and we're starting this Friday. Let's roll. So it's going to be interesting to see, and we're going to have no way of knowing until we get some results on the field who did a really good job and who didn't do a good job, whether it's just the Royals guys or we're playing against Cleveland first, how good of a job did those guys have an opportunity to do. I think it's going to shake it out pretty quick and early, you know, who did the best job of being able to be ready.
Well, the Royals' strength is not their starting pitching. That may be the case
Never
in a couple of
been.
Years, right? I mean, they got a lot of really young pitchers who they think are going to be very good players, okay? And someone might say, hey, it's a 60-game season, go pitch these guys. But they got to protect them as well, because, I mean, they obviously, you don't want to give up on a season. Maybe you tank this year, maybe you don't. Dayton Moore's never been a tank guy. I mean, they've tanked the last 2 years, but not on purpose, okay?
Right.
I mean, that's not in kind of what he's about. So you can't go out there, and they're very concerned, and there's no real good science to this, right? How many innings a guy is supposed to throw? You know, at this point now, all of these young pitchers, even the college arms, they threw some last year, and they haven't really done anything now. So there's an underwork part too, where you'll lose a whole year of development of pitching 100 or 150 innings in minor league baseball. These are unprecedented decisions these guys are going to have to make with these arms. If there was ever a spot where the Royals had a chance to pitch some young arms, it would be now, with the fact that some of their guys are out and they just don't have much.
Can
you
I
know,
give you
top,
my opinion?
Top talent at the top.
I know you guys want my opinion. We got the big leaguer over here, Bluma. But you tell me if this is wrong. I want to see the guys pitch. I think that it's important when you're learning how to play a sport to play the sport. I believe games matter. I think that, in an ideal world, maybe Brady Singer should be pitching in AAA right now and playing. But I feel like there's more damage to be done by sitting around and not playing than there is by playing against guys that are maybe a little bit better than you. I mean, you know what? Challenge him. And it, yeah, I know it can damage your confidence a little bit and all that, but I would rather see him go out there and pitch on a consistent basis against good competition and learn how to get him out. What do you think?
Yes, I agree with all that. Here's the thing. If you're going to go do that and you're going to use all your young guys, guess who you have to use next year? Those guys again, because they're now on your roster. So you don't have spots for guys. Okay, maybe those guys shouldn't have been in the big leagues 2020, and they need to be in AAA this year. Well, then who's going to be in the big leagues next year?
You're talking about the 40-man roster.
Right. You only have so many slots, and it's not going to. We're not going to have the luxury. Who knows what's going to happen in 2021, but I doubt we're going to have a 30-man roster to start the year in 2021.
But if they're good, then
maybe that's
you want
why they didn't put
year, right?
Ace Lacy up here.
Which is great if they're all good, and we didn't rush them. And Brady Singer, I think he's kind of the outlier, because I think he's going to get an opportunity, whether it was COVID or not, to probably pitch in the big leagues this year, you know, at some point. Well, now he's probably definitely going to get a chance to do it this year. What are we doing moving forward? That's what I worry about is, hey, maybe these guys weren't ready to pitch in the big leagues. Yes, this is a great opportunity to get some guys some innings at the top of the heap here at the big. Then what happens next year? We have to, those guys are going to have to pitch here too, because we don't have enough slots on a roster to just be able to do that willy-nilly for this 60-game season. And then in 2021, expect those guys to be able to do a 162-game season and be ready to go. Maybe they failed at the major league level. They're still on the roster, so they're going to have to be somewhere in the organization, AAA or AA or whatever. Well, then who's in the major leagues next year?
Well, you got to hope they're good. Now, here's the deal with Singer. I haven't been around him a lot, but I've been around him some. He was out there, you know, I was out at spring training for 5-6 days and talked to him a little bit. We had him sit down with Seren, talked to him in the clubhouse a little bit. And they had him on a Zoom on Sunday afternoon. They put him on a Zoom. You don't just put a guy on a Zoom, right? So I think he's going to be some, I don't know if he's going to be in the 30 or whatever, but I know this. He thinks he can do this.
He better.
And I don't.
Every single one of these guys better think they can do this. You know, that's what it.
But I get the feeling sometimes when I look at some of these guys who've been in the league for 3 or 4 years, I don't think they think they can do it. You know, he's got a very professional already. Like, he feels like I've been a starting pitcher for like 5 years in the Major League Baseball when you talk to him. I don't know if he can do it on the field, but he's got that mental part of it, which is part of the battle, isn't it?
Well, yeah, and then and so those guys that aren't there, the guys that have been bouncing back and forth and maybe had a little bit of success at the big league level, well, then they didn't. So they got shipped back to AAA, and then they pitched pretty good there, and then you get back up. They're still trying to find your way. Until you've had sustained success at the major league level, of course there's always going to be a little bit of doubt, because you're up and down, and you're up and down, and you're up and down. Brady Singer hasn't failed at the major league level, so he's still got that confidence that he's going to get it done at the major league level. And every single guy that hasn't been to the big leagues yet that has continued to put up numbers better have that attitude. You have no reason to not have that attitude, because you're doing exactly what you're supposed to be doing. What, one, because maybe you were a high draft pick and you've been successful the whole time, then we expect you to have continued success through the minor leagues and all the way into the big leagues. That's why you got drafted and paid as much money as you did. So I would expect Brady Singer to be exactly what he is right now. Now, this is a humbling game, and hopefully he doesn't fail at the major league level and he continues to have good success. But track record says everybody fails at some point.
Most guys do.
Sure. So, you know what? What happens after he fails a little bit? How does he right the ship? I mean, that's what you look for in some guys is, man, everybody makes it to the big leagues pretty confident, and they are talented. What happens when we fail at some point along the way to be able to bounce back, figure out some of the things we did wrong, and improve?
Now, you're not in there all the time, but would you have him on your 30 to start this?
I would have him on my 30, yes. Stuff-wise, attitude-wise, I think he was going to pitch in this team at some point this year, whether there wasn't COVID, because that's your guy. Now, the other guys, I don't know. I mean, some of those guys haven't been much above AA. At least he was AA, AAA last year, so hey, man, he's ready.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. He was a college pitcher. Part of the reason they drafted all these college guys was the idea that they would be able to move relatively quickly. And this is another one of the terrible side effects of this whole COVID thing, is that there is not that minor league season for those guys to take another step forward. So you got to find out the best way to try to develop those guys and not set them back a full year in their progress. And that conundrum of, do you waste your service time on letting them get that competition this year in addition to the roster spot? When you talked about guys that had made it to the big leagues and failed and sent down and then come up and failed again, that might lose that confidence, the person I was thinking of was a guy that hit a home run last night, Bubba Starling. He has apparently looked really good through this summer camp. He did hit a home run against another big league pitcher last night. What's your level, before we take a break, of optimism for a guy like Bubba Starling? Could this be the type of year that he takes a step forward?
It needs to be. I mean, he probably knows that too. I mean, he's starting to get to the point where he's, you know, old and was a prospect. Now he's a suspect. And we all want him to be here because he's from here and all that. But he's put in the work, mm-hmm. and he's had the success, at least this spring. And when he came up last year, he did great at the beginning. And then the league adjusted to him. He didn't do a great job adjusting to pitchers. Put the work in this winter. Spring training, he's looked great this year. Man, maybe he's turned the corner. I think he's been one of the success stories of this camp, how good he's looked and how, you know, he's going to play great defensively. We've known that all along. But I'm excited for him. I mean, I hope he gets the opportunity to get some at-bats and have some sustained success at the major league level. Whether it's right now, it's going to be with Kansas City and moving forward. Because if he didn't do it this year in spring training, he's out of options here. He would have to have gone and done it somewhere else.
Bluma, always awesome to have you in. Glad you passed both your tests. And we hope Emily keeps feeling good. And where can people get a hold of you if they want to get some baseball work in?
Thank you, guys. We're at Homefield KC. We have facilities in Olathe, 2115 East Kansas City Road. We have another facility in Bannister, 435 in Bannister, 5000 Bannister Road. You can find me on Twitter, BundyJr19. You can find me on Facebook. You can hunt me down.
There you go.
Find him right outside the building.
Can I find you on the text message chain with Greg Gurley?
Yes, you can find me there.
Oh, dangerous
you can,
place
you
for
can,
people.
You can lose
I tell
me
you
on
another.
That.
A really quick. Speaking of that, a funny story. There's been
thanks, Gurley. I'm glad you're listening.
Some things you just can't unsee.
Yeah. The last couple of weeks, there's been
seen that before.
There's a text chain of all of us that were all former minor leaguers and major leaguers from Kansas City. So Glendon Rush, myself, Mike Sweeney, and then Mike Bovey, who got just a 30 guys that all spent some time together coming up through the minor leagues. So that's been going on for about 3 weeks. I can't even keep up with it because
Gurley out of that.
It's Gurley's not going. He's not part of our.
You don't
group,
want so Gurley in there.
That's pretty fun.
Not with Mike Sweeney.
No.
That's funny. Well, thank you guys. Appreciate it as always.
Jamie Bluma, all time great guy, right there. We'll be right back with another great guy. Mm. No,
we'll see.
We'll get a weather forecast from Gary Lezak right after this.